Support for Midwest Swing is brought to you by baseball.
The Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Chris Jimenez, and you're listening to Midwest Swing on the Zone Coverage Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
Hey, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon underscore Warren. And for the first part of this show, the rebuilt brand new Midwest Swing, we will be joined by a special guest previewing the Chicago White Sox series here that is coming up over the weekend. In the second half of the show, we'll bring on a friend of ours. You can find him on Twitter at 2_Canes with a Z. It's Ryan Turnquist. But before we get to that point, we got to first cross the bridge that we have first built, which is to bring on James Fegan. Am I saying that right, man?
Yeah, pretty right. Pretty much it's a family dispute about how to pronounce it over the last 100 years.
What's the alternate?
Fegan is like Fegan. The way it came over when the Irish family first immigrated.
Oh, okay.
It was originally O'Fagan. Now there's an E in it. Nobody knows.
Yeah, that's...
This is probably not why you brought me on to discuss my last name.
No, that sounds super Irish, so that makes sense to me, which is great. So you are covering the White Sox. I understand you had other things going on the last couple of days, so you have not been around the team as they've been playing, I believe, St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I've been moving into a new place, so I've merely been just watching their games on TV and texting executives about 12th round draft picks and so only slightly taking a break.
Yeah, right. It never seems to be too far from my mind when I'm away from the park. Now the team will be in Chicago here this weekend. We have Tom Schreier covering for Zone Coverage, which is actually kind of an exciting thing for us because it's the first road trip that we have covered as a, I guess you could call us a website, but it'll be our first World Series. So hopefully if you see him, say hi. And try to lead him not too far astray. But it is a series now with the 8-20 White Sox, and if I'm not mistaken, the Twins are 10-16. So which start has surprised you more? I think I know the answer, but I'm going to not try to lead you down the road too far and just let you go where you're going to go.
Given that the one game I've seen at the Twins, Jose Berrios was just throwing, like, no-hit stuff and, like, some nasty curveball that was like 80 miles an hour and mm-hmm. corkscrewing like mad. The idea that he's even allowed runs this season is kind of jarring to me. But yeah, generally with kind of the weakness of the AL Central outside the Twins and Indians, I kind of expect the Twins to kind of get out to a hot start. Though I guess they haven't played that much AL Central so far this year.
Right. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say the Twins surprised me. Like, I'm probably not like super high on the Twins like this year until mm-hmm. like more of their pitching arrives, but sure. I expect them to be over 500. So this is a little surprising to me.
So let me poke the bear a little bit. What do you mean you only saw one game of the Twins? Did something happen when you were in Minnesota?
Yeah, I ate a lot of room service while being snowed in at my hotel.
So did you stay at least near the stadium? I mean, so you didn't have a long commute when you were covering those snowed out games if they made you at least come in to talk to the team or anything? I mean, you must have been at least close in the downtown area, right?
Well, yeah, I was like super sly with it. Like, I'm going to stay downtown and I'm going to walk to games. It's only a 15-minute walk. You know, it's 15 minutes if it's not like, 3 feet of snow outside.
True.
But no, we only had to go to the park two times because, as a media member, you kind of depend on players for quotes. It's kind of disappointing. I'd rather go to the park every day. But true. Yeah, I mostly just sat alone in a room and watched a lot of NBA playoffs, and got paid to do it, so that was great.
Yeah, I mean, NBA playoffs isn't a bad way to pass the time either. So there's been a lot going on with these White Sox. I mean, you've got some high-profile players injured. There's the Danny Farquhar situation. I want to ask you about Danny Farquhar. obviously a very scary situation. What does you know, what's going on with him lately, and you know, what's the prognosis? Because it was pretty scary there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, everything that they've put out is that, you know, this is, you know, you don't see a lot of people having, you know, ruptured aneurysms and, you know, needing emergency brain surgery. That's not an injury we talk about a lot
right.
in baseball. So kind of putting his projection as far as that path is very difficult. I think everyone would just be happy if he returns to normal again.
Right.
Or, you know, right. The players haven't even had a chance to visit him because they're not trying to put that much stress on him beyond just kind of being with his family. And resting and recuperating. They did put out that he's been, you know, able to go on some walks in the ICU with his wife, and he's been able to remain, you know, he's expected to remain in the ICU for the next few weeks. You know, I think that probably the team will be allowed to visit him or talk with him, you know, kind of in a controlled environment, you know, sometime down the road. But I don't think anyone really knows what to expect as far as his career, other than just hoping that he can, you know, have a, you know, return to full function and, you know, live a full life and raise his three small children. But, you know, everyone's kind of happy as far as that he seems to be out of the woods as far as the major medical concerns. You know, it was a life-threatening incident.
For
so
sure.
The fact that he's talking or texting at all, you know, it's very encouraging for everybody.
Yeah, it puts everything into perspective pretty quickly. Avisail Garcia out for at least a little while yet with a grade 2 hamstring strain. How much have they missed him offensively? I know he was off to a tough start. In fact, 17 strikeouts, no walks, which is not quite what we saw from him last year. That's a little bit more of the wild swinging Avi that we knew from previous years. But, you know, the offense has kind of been hit or miss. And have they missed him a lot, do you think, in your opinion?
I mean, since they haven't missed him a lot, because Avi was having, you know, as much as he was kind of a free swinging and disappointing in the first couple of years of his career, this season was probably the worst of anything. Like, he was actually, his play discipline actually regressed from, you know, previous years before his all-star campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say they're missing him because he was off to a very slow start, but in general they're missing a guy who was, you know, a 130 WRC plus all last year,
right,
hitting 330 and getting on base with a little bit of pop. So yeah, they've been missing since. Their offense grading out, like, just raw production is, you know, I think it's hovering around league average, or it was before the St. Louis series. It's their runners in scoring position, which over a month, you know, can swing kind of wildly.
Sure.
That's really kept them behind and kept them towards the bottom of the league standings. You know, you'd expect that to normalize. Definitely they're not getting anything that replicates last year's Avi production from basically trying to figure out if Trace Thompson can find back his 2015 form, or if Daniel Palka, you know, can hit big league pitching.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some hot games, but, you know, he definitely looks like somebody who's very aggressive and hunting and trying to put his stake on the world in his first couple of games. He's just not, you know, waiting and being very patient so far, but, you know, the pop is obviously there. Yeah, you don't really have a kind of a proven major league contributor out of either of those groups, and the fact that Nicky Delmonico's power has not really showed up in the first, you know, 5 weeks of the season, you know, they haven't really had a productive outfield offense, so.
Yeah,
yeah.
The upshot of the Garcia thing was that Palka, a former Twins prospect, got the call. Have you gotten to talk to him at all, you know, kind of see what he's like? I've heard his defense can be particularly shaky, and I don't know if that's played out much to this point or not. You know, what are your early reviews of him thus far?
I talked to him a bit in spring training, and, you know, we've talked to him a couple times since he got called up. He's a very, very big dude. I think one reporter joked to him, like, hey, have you lifted weights a couple times before in your life? Because he's just, like, his chest, like, it's just bulging out of his shirt.
That's amazing.
So yeah, he doesn't have has a frame that doesn't make you think that, you know, he's going to, you know, be a fast runner in the outfield. He's probably better suited as a first baseman or a guy you hide in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, his bat really has to carry the load, and, you know, he was drawing walks and, you know, hitting for power in AAA, but striking out a 30% rate that kind of made you wonder about what would happen when he's gotten called up. That hasn't really been the case so far, if only thing because he seems to be swinging in the count so aggressively since he's got called up to the majors. But yeah, it's really, you know, remains to be seen how much he can really produce at the level that will, you know, make his defense acceptable up here. I think he'll probably mostly use as somebody who matches up against righties off the bench and splitting time with Trace Thompson. I don't think they're going to give him, like, everyday reps or anything.
Yeah. Physically, Trace Thompson, I mean, how does he look? I know he had a back issue, and that can obviously be very difficult to come back from. Have you seen much of him that you think makes you think he can spring out of this, you know, this tough stretch? Because, I mean, obviously his year last year with the Dodgers was pretty bad too. So, you know, is there any hope in your opinion?
I would say there's hope in the since the Trace says he's been 100% basically since spring training 2017. You know, I've heard about the setbacks he had with some bad epidurals back when he was trying to recover from his back injury. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that he played with it through 2016, not really knowing that there were fractures going on underneath. He just thought he was dealing with pain or tightness for the longest time. You know, the tools are great. He's got a great raw power. He's got pretty good range and speed, especially if he's going to be mostly in a corner, which he has been so far. You know, he's gotten turned around some balls in a way that hasn't been so impressive the first couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. It's always been an approach issue with him. You know, he's going to be a 20% or more strikeout guy. It's about whether or not he can just lay off a little bit to kind of give him pitches to drive. But he's got all fields power. You know, you really haven't seen someone to get excited about in the last 2 years. And, you know, it's probably going to be difficult. He's mentioned it's difficult for him to really kind of get into his mode, not playing every day. And I don't know if that's going to come, both splitting time with Palka and the fact that Avi will be returning eventually. So I'm not super optimistic that it's going to all of a sudden lock back into place. But
yeah,
his tools make him as interesting as anybody they have to kind of, play there. It'd be interesting if he got more opportunities in center field, given the fact that Adam Engel's offense is not really turn around like they hoped. Larry Garcia is probably the most productive outfielder the last couple of weeks, and they kind of see him as more of an utility man who mixes in the infield. So it's really kind of a fluid situation. You would hope that Trace would get the chance to kind of show if he can be an everyday guy, but they're kind of bouncing around with all their options.
So Carlos Rodon on the 60-day DL. I do have ulterior motives for asking because I have him in score sheet, which is a fantasy league I'm in for the Baseball Prospectus guys, but I do want to know. I mean, is he on the recovery path? I know the Twins have a couple guys in the similar boat with Trevor May and Irvin Santana, and I know both teams are probably really chomping at the bit to get these guys back. Is he progressing well as far as you've heard with this the shoulder situation?
Yeah, he's been making a couple starts in extended spring training. I believe he's up to 4. He's eligible to come back off the disabled list on May 28th by putting him on the 60-day.
Sure.
I think he would probably start making a rehab start in an affiliate maybe end of next week, and that would put him on schedule for something like that. You know, he hasn't reported any pain or any complications the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't had any kind of look at him to see where his velocity is at or what his stuff is at against the real-life competition. And when you have a situation where you open up your shoulder with a scalpel, it's always a question of how much your stuff returns.
For sure.
You know, he didn't have the level of injury with, John Danks had, where his stuff never returned. But pretty much elbow injuries are very predictable in how much your stuff returns and shoulders are not. So it remains to be seen until he's really out there facing minor league hitters. Though at the same time, Carlos Rodon, his rehab starts last year when he was dealing with something similar, he was absolutely terrible, and then he came up with his first couple of major league starts and couldn't throw a strike, and then all of a sudden it was the same old Carlos Rodon again and really showed some of the potential that he still has. So I don't really know how much to judge off rehab starts anymore after the way he kind of messed with our heads and just got shelled in high-A wins in Salem for the first couple of rehab starts. But it seems like everything's progressing well as far as his timeline, even if I don't really know how well he's pitching.
So, Yoan Moncada went down with a hammy today, another dreaded hamstring, just like Avisail Garcia. Obviously, hopefully, or most likely not to the same degree. But what does it do to this offense when a guy like that goes down? I mean, I know the obvious answer, but it obviously has to make it a much, much more shallow offense. And you know, if the Twins are looking for a chance to kind of get over on someone, would this be the opportunity they might be looking for, as opposed to if he was fully healthy and doing what he's been doing all year, which has been playing quite well?
Yeah, I would say he's both their second best hitter and probably against right-handers, their best hitter.
Yeah.
So with that, beyond the fact that he's also a threat in the base pass, if he's missing any time at all, you know, it makes the White Sox extremely vulnerable against right-handed starters. Against left-handed starters, he's more just kind of just a guy in their lineup, since Tim Anderson and Matt Davidson, Jose Abreu, those are all guys who, you know, feast on lefties fine. But yeah, against, you know, if they're facing Barrios this weekend or, Kyle Gibson or anything like that, they're going to be vulnerable because that's Moncada's going to be the main guy who's going to be their weapon against him. You know, he didn't go down in a heap like Avi. It wasn't like he pulled up lame and it was something. I don't know if you should be encouraged or discouraged by the fact that he basically had the same tightness in his hamstring 2 weeks ago and played literally the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could mean that it's minor and he bounces back. It could be it's a lingering issue that's going to bother him for the, you know, next few weeks or months. So it kind of remains to be seen how he, you know, bounces back from it. He was smiling about it after postgame from everything I've read. He's also dealing with a sore thumb and fouled the ball off his foot, so he's got a lot to deal with. It probably wouldn't, you know, be the craziest thing for a rebuilding team to rest literally the most important player in the lineup for a day or two if this is all that's bothering him.
Well, I come to tell you that it's all righties for the Twins in this series, and that's because they only have righties. Fernando Romero made his MLB debut today, was very impressive. He will get St. Louis. He's going to miss the Chicago series. He'll probably get Carlos Martinez on Monday night, which I'm pretty excited about, on ESPN. So set your watches to that or set your DVRs. But the four-game pitching matchup that I see here is Jake Odorizzi versus Reynaldo Lopez. To start the series, Jose Berríos versus Carson Fulmer. Lance Lynn against Hector Santiago and Kyle Gibson against James Shields. Anything about those matchups that stands out to you particularly?
Let's see. I would say Lopez has kind of been the most consistently compelling watch in the White Sox rotation this season. He hasn't always been like super sharp. I think he's had some nights where he had more walks than strikeouts, but his stuff has been most consistent. You know, he throws 95 plus pretty regularly. His slider, which was just a pitch he was toying with last year, is now a pretty regular swing and miss pitch. And I love his changeup. He does so much with his changeup; it's almost like works like a curveball with the level of drop he gets from it. He can kind of use it as a strike grabber early in the count and toss a wipeout pitch. He hasn't really had the great curveball that he had when he was in Washington Nationals prospect very consistently with Chicago, but it's something he's mixed in. Well, you know, he has all the tools to really dominate a lineup. Sometimes his fastball command just kind of abandons with him for stretches, and he just really can't set it up in the same way. But, you know, with Lucas Giolito, we wonder kind of if his curveball is going to be consistent with Carson Fulmer. You know, we haven't really seen the curveball he had since Vanderbilt, and he's still kind of mastering his changeup. With Ronaldo Lopez, all three of his off-speed pitches are usually there and functioning on any given night. It's just about whether or not he's missing his fastball too much to really make it work. But I've really been a lot more optimistic watching him based on his first 5-6 starts this season than I was at the end of last year at spring training. He's impressed me. Fulmer is kind of in a mode where he's dealt so much with control problems in the early part of this year. He's kind of attacking games with, I don't care about giving solo home runs, I just don't want to walk myself out of a game again, which is what he did in Oakland when he was staked to a 6-1 lead, and that clearly bugged him a great deal. You know, he's kind of got a lot of natural life and run on his four-seamer, even though it's only sitting like 91, 94 these days compared to when he was in college, so that he can get a lot of weak contact off that. He hasn't been much of a strikeout guy at all, but he's really just going to be a guy who's going to try to attack hitters and not walk anybody and not worry about if he gets barreled once or twice or three or four or five times with his fastball in the zone, because he doesn't want to pitch himself out of games anymore.
So we've talked about Hector Santiago off the air via, you know, messages and that sort of thing. How do you like him as a dude, though? I mean, obviously, I really like talking to him in the Twins clubhouse, and he was a lot of fun. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to wins on the field, but as part of the story or part of the deal when you're in the clubhouse day in and day out is finding guys you can kind of seek out. What has been your vibe from him, and, you know, what are your expectations for him?
You know, every interaction I've had with Hector has been extremely great. He's a very nice guy. It's universal. I probably haven't talked to him as much as maybe I should have or much as I'd like to. The kind of role he's in as a kind of a weird long reliever swingman, it's kind of weird to kind of pin down what his impact is on the team.
Right.
You know, he's kind of stuck throwing two or three innings at the back of some mop-up start or some sort of, like, disaster that the White Sox ran into in a game that's not competitive, where it, you know, provides a lot of function and use for Renteria to save his bullpen, but doesn't give a lot of impact on the game or team. So it's kind of nice to see him get a start in Kansas City. And he was kind of interesting in the sense that he kind of worked just fastball and changeup and really turned over the lineup pretty effectively and was getting, you know, at that point, he struck out like five guys over 4 2/3. And the way the White Sox rotation's been going, that was like their most strikeouts in a start for any starter in like 3 weeks. And I asked him about it because the Statcast said like he was throwing sinkers and changeups, and that was pretty much his only pitches. And he was like, yeah, I don't throw a sinker. I don't throw a two-seamer. I throw all four-seamers. It's just the action my life gets on his pitches, on my pitches. It's just kind of got this natural sinking movement. I don't know why that is, but I only throw four-seamers. It was kind of a fun conversation with me, just kind of apologizing for kind of like misclassifying his pitches. But yeah, he was like, yeah, I don't know why Statcast does that. But he's a very accommodating dude. There was a funny story He's wearing number 21 all spring training, and Wellington Castillo was throwing 53, and then the regular season started, and they had switched. And I asked Hector about it, and he's just like, I didn't have to give him anything. I just asked him. And I asked Wellington about it. It's like, Hector showed me this tattoo on his back that's like him and his wife and his kid, and the number 53 is like planted over them. And he like saw it and realized, like, okay, this, I've liked the number 53, but this is way more serious for you. You can have it.
It's not that big of a deal. That's amazing. Other, you know, pitching staff stuff. Nate Jones off to what seems to be at least a pretty good start. If I gave you 50% odds on him being on the team at the end of the year, would you take the over or under?
I might go slightly over.
The contract is really good. I mean, the contract is good.
Right. It's an extremely good contract, so both they could conceivably keep him until he's 35. I think he's 31 now at a very affordable rate.
Right.
So it's definitely an opportunity to be a contributor on, say, if you expect next year's White Sox team to be good, because you're going to go out in free agency and kind of, and if you want that team to kind of be competitive in 2019, 2020, you know, it'll make it easier to already kind of have a late inning bullpen guy rather than one more you have to pay market rate for. So I can see the argument for keeping him there. Another, you know, qualifier of him being ready or being traded at the deadline is he has to be healthy. And, you know, Nate Jones the past 2 years hasn't really been super consistently healthy. He definitely doesn't have mechanics where I say, like, oh, yeah, he's going to be great.
Makes him really hard to hit on MLB The Show, I'll add.
Yeah, he doesn't project perfect health. You know, he definitely feels great now and hasn't had any limitations. Sure. And is hitting 98 like he always did. But it's kind of both. The White Sox need to be blown away with an offer, given the fact that he's affordable long term, and the fact that he needs to be, you know, perfectly healthy and in sync for the deadline. And, you know, they would absolutely. Their bullpen has not been steady beyond Jones at all, so they definitely put Victor Renteria through the ringer as far as finding out solutions after they trade away like 6-7 relievers last year, and they'd be putting him in a similar spot again to trade away Jones. So I definitely think it's very possible, but I'd probably put it like 30-40% chance that he's really dealt.
Well, before I let you go, I got to ask you, excuse me, I saw Casey Stern from MLB Network talking about the Dodgers making a trade for Jose Abreu and moving Bellinger to the outfield full-time. Now, obviously you're familiar with Dan Hayes, who will be in Chicago to cover the Twins for the Athletic, which is actually where your writing can be found. I guess I probably buried that lead. They can find you on Twitter at JRFEGAN, so I apologize for that. But obviously subscribe to the Athletic because it's great writing and great reporting and all that. But I was talking to Dan Hayes about it before. When they were doing kind of the retool with getting rid of some of the vets, he insisted that they want Abreu around as a mentor for Moncada. Do you still feel that right now? Or do you think if the right offer came around, whether it was Boston or whoever, that Abreu could be had now as he's in his age 31 season?
Yes, but their idea of a right offer is probably not in line with the rest of the league.
That's fair. That's fair.
I had a source who was like for a team that said, like, we're definitely pursuing Abreu this offseason. We're interested in him. And then like 3 weeks later when I checked in with him, I was like, hey, any progress on Abreu? And he just said, like, Rakan's insane. So clearly, like, their valuation of Abreu is a bit higher. And they've said as much that they feel like they factor in his mentoring presence and his clubhouse presence into their value. So obviously they're going, because they can see it up close, they're going to value him more than other teams were. Certainly they're probably more convinced with his increased focus on fitness and dieting, the fact he's lost 20 pounds, that they think he's going to age better than probably every projection system would put in a first baseman like Jose Abreu to age over the course of, you know, 32, 33, 34 age seasons. So yes, I think they would also be willing to trade him. I think they're not any special untouchable status, but the likelihood of a deal being made seems really low at this point, especially if he was able to make it through last offseason, where seemingly his value would be at the highest, given that he's younger than he's ever going to be going forward, and just coming off and basically what was supposed to a career year. If that offseason did not see him get traded, I don't see it's likely. At the same time, I think the idea that you permanently can never trade Jose Abreu because Yan Moncada will always need a mentor probably seems a little far-fetched. He's at this point become acclimated. And as the saying might go, if your franchise player needs a permanent mentor to succeed, then maybe he probably isn't your franchise player.
That sounds a little like Josh Hamilton. Maybybe that's a bad reference, but
Not a direct comparison to any issues Moncada's going
through. I mean, just a little different. I don't know.
But it's, yes, you don't want your star player to need a permanent caddy.
No, that's true. And honestly, if that's the case, then that's a conversation for a different day. So I trust that Minnesota didn't scare you away enough that you won't come back. So hopefully we'll see you down the road here at Target Field. Do you have any plans to come to Target Field to cover any of these series coming up the rest of the way?
I'm sure I will. I'm horrible at planning ahead. My editor did tell me that maybe the next April Road Series to Minnesota might get skipped in light of what
scuttled
they wound up paying for.
Oh yeah.
This year.
Hopefully you didn't have any rentals of night nurses from Jersey, like on Little Big League or anything like that. But I hope we were hospitable to you, and hopefully you find it in your heart and find the courage to come back, because Minnesota's not bad when we're not covered by 3 feet of snow. I promise you.
Am I banned from the podcast if I admit I've never seen Little Big League?
No, it's fine. I've never watched all of Major League, so I get crap from the movies I haven't seen all the time. So no, not at all. Hey, so thank you so much for taking time out of your evening and your moving and all that fun stuff. People should follow you on Twitter at JRFEGAN. Subscribe to The Athletic Minnesota, and then you will get access to The Athletic Chicago, The Athletic with the hockey stuff. There's all kinds of fun stuff on The Athletic. Check it out. Check out James's work. And hey, thank you so much for taking time out to be with us.
I agree. People should follow me on Twitter.
Yes.
But please do not yell at me, because I'm very sensitive.
Well, good. All right. More from Midwest Swing here in a moment, and we'll be right back. And we are back for the second part of Midwest Swing, the new and improved Midwest Swing. I am Brandon Warren. Again, you can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And I bring on a very special sidekick. You may know him from Twitter at @2_Canes with a Z. It's Ryan Turnquist. What's going on, buddy?
Not a whole lot. Just hanging out here. Got done with my final class of the semester here earlier this evening. And now just hanging out, ready to talk some baseball.
Yeah, so people might be aware that we are not on Locked On Twins anymore. That was a decision that we kind of collaborated on. It was just too difficult to do daily shows. Obviously, a lot of gratitude to David Locke, Tommy Stocky, and the whole crew. But we're going to try to do two shows a week, be a little bit more accommodating for our personal schedules and that sort of thing. So this is a podcast I've been doing, as people may know, for quite some time. And so it wasn't that we, pulled up the stakes and decided to go someplace else. It was really a matter of a fit. And so we decided to get that out there, get that on the record. So if we ever have to point back at anything, we can do that. But I'm excited to move forward, and I hope you are too as well, bud.
Yeah, I mean, the platform for me, as far as that, really doesn't make a difference. I just love to talk baseball, so I'm excited to keep doing that.
So we were at Fernando Romero's MLB debut today at Target Field.
We were.
And man alive, just a really, really great effort. 98 miles per hour with the fastball at his peak, which was the fastest Twins fastball of the season, 96.8. Tyler Kinley, the since returned Rule 5 pick to the Miami Marlins. But what impressed you most about Romero? I know you were really jazzed about seeing him pitch today.
I was. That's a good word for it.
Yeah.
Probably the most impressive thing, I think, is just the sheer stuff. I mean, you see him pitch consistently 94 to 96, all the way up to 98, and then just the wicked sliders that he was throwing as well. And just the fact that in his first start, he's facing a pretty decent lineup, and it didn't look too big for him. You know, he got into a little bit of trouble, but he danced out of it. Was able to get a couple big plays in front of him to strike him out, throw him out, and then the double play in the fifth inning.
Mm-hmm.
It never really looked too big for him. So just all around a very, very impressive first start for Romero.
Not too much to really hang our hats on for the Twins here in the Blue Jays series, dropping 2 of 3 from, I guess, what I think is a decent but not great Toronto team that was without Josh Donaldson, and I believe they have somebody else on the disabled list, so I'm not remembering. Devon Travis, maybe. Is there somebody I'm missing that's on the DL?
I was trying to think about that. I know Donaldson is. Travis, they just sent out to AAA, but I think it's just Donaldson.
I mean, even still, that's a big deal.
Tula, Steve Pierce, as well, is injured.
And Tula, so. Which is just kind of a state of perpetuity. So,
right.
Yeah, beating Strowman today, no small feat there. Obviously deserve quite a bit of praise for that. But I think, too, the big thing that was a takeaway for me was Paul Molitor actually got his bullpen lined up. And to be able to line it up with Hildenberger getting, an out with a runner on, whether it's with one out or two outs in the inning, because he's such a ground ball guy. Then you go Zach Duke, Addison Reed, and Fernando Rodney with a four-run lead. It was nice to finally have it lined up where everybody pitched their role, so to speak, and it really went smoothly with very few hiccups down the last few innings.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to look, right? That's kind of how they draw it up. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of supposed to be that way last night. Addison Reed struggled a bit in the eighth inning, and they ended up tying the game in the eighth off him, but we had it somewhat lined up last night. But it was cool to see that come to fruition today with a good start from your starting pitcher and then get the bullpen lined up the way you want it. That's exactly how you draw it up in the pregame meeting.
Yeah, and so they're heading to Chicago. They're already in Chicago, I would assume, based on when we're recording this. But it's lined up for the Twins to take on a Chicago team that may or may not have the full complement of its good players, as Yoan Moncada dealing with a bit of a hamstring. I know they don't have Avisail Garcia, but what they do have is Daniel Palka. what are you expecting from this four-game set against Chicago? It's a weird team, but it is a team that is 8-20 and three games behind the Twins in the standings in terms of percentage points.
Well, yeah, you just said it, 8-20. They're not good, right? And this is, in my eyes, at 10-16 for this Twins team, this is the time where you really want to make hay and sort of turn in terms of turning this thing around. So you have four games against an 8-20 team. I would say anything less than winning three in Chicago would be a disappointment in my eyes.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not at a point where I'm really trying to sell hope or sell on this team, but I don't know. I mean, I think you don't really know a pivotal time until the season's over and you kind of look back on it. But it's going to be pretty important for them to, for the Twins to find a way to get back to .500. After that, it all kind of figures itself out. But, this road trip, I feel like they really, really, really need to galvanize, some potential as far as pitching and, keep that bullpen rolling. Find out if they've got roles for guys like Phil Hughes, Matt McGill. And then figure out, what they're going to do with, shortstop. They got Petit and they've got Adrianza. Not ideal. The back end of the order is going to be kind of weak. But while they're weathering the storm to get Byron Buxton back and Miguel Sano back and Trevor May and Irvin Santana, even Jorge Polanco, at this point, it's going to be nice to be facing the Chicagos of the world rather than, Boston and the Yankees all over again.
Yeah, this series is coming, I would say, at the right time for the Twins and a good opportunity to, you mentioned, just get back to the .500 mark to kind of almost get your head above water a little bit is the way I like to say it. 10-16 is not where they want it to be at this point in the season, May 2nd. But by all means, I mean, it's a long season and it's not over by any means here. So if they can play well in Chicago, keep the momentum from the Romero start rolling, they'll be just fine. But as far as early season series go, this does seem like a pretty pivotal one.
Well, let's go back to Romero for just 1 second. 97 pitches, yeah. 12 swinging strikes, and 8 of the 11 batted balls from him were grounders. I mean, you can't ask for much more than that. I mean, 7 base runners, 5 2/3 innings, your whip, or whatever you want to call base runner quotient, I guess, is not great.
Yes.
But the markers for everything else, pretty dang good, wouldn't you say?
Well, if you keep missing bats, if you keep getting hitters to swing and miss and you keep the ball on the ground, I think at the end of the day, your recipe for success is going to be pretty good. So
yeah.
He showed everything you want him to show in his first start. Command a little iffy here and there. three walks, but really only one extra base hit from Diaz there in the fifth with the double, and really no qualms about the performance at all. I was really impressed. If you would have told me going into today you were going to see Fernando Romero's major league debut, and oh, by the way, he's not going to give up a run, you're going to take that. So it's pretty great.
Have we talked about who he's slated to face on Monday?
Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, how about that? The first person to respond.
His doppelganger, maybe.
Yeah, somebody sent me the Spider-Man pointing meme, and I thought, you know what? That's pretty fair. Hey, what's that noise I hear outside your house? Can I hear the light rail?
You can hear the light rail. That is how close we are to the light rail.
I did not know that. That's crazy. as I digress. I think Romero, you know, it's not like when Francisco Liriano faced Roger Clemens back in 2006. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. But that could be a really, really fun matchup.
Well, you know, and I was talking to my dad tonight, and he goes, how old is this Romero kid? I said, he's 23. And he said, man, is he going to be fun to watch down the line with him, with Barrios and Romero at the front of the rotation? And that they haven't had that sort of power arm combination since Santana and Liriano, really, in that 2006 season.
Yeah.
So, you know, to kind of tie that back, and I was thinking about the potential of those two in the front of a rotation, and it does get you excited.
Do you think there's any chance Romero could be better than Barrios?
Yeah, I'd say there's a chance.
Like it's likely? Is it long shot. I know there's a lot to figure here, but Barrios just has a little more polish. I think Romero has more stuff, and that's where the floor versus ceiling kind of argument comes into play, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Ultimately, I would take Barrios to have the better career. I would say maybe tough to put numbers on something like this, but maybe a 25% chance that Romero has a better career than Barrios. I think very highly of Barrios as a pitcher.
Yeah.
But I mean, they were similarly touted prospects. Maybe Barrios touted a little bit higher. But I mean, so it's possible that Romero could be better. But when it's all said and done, I think I'm gonna take Barrios.
Yeah, I think that's probably a perfectly reasonable take. So
sure.
I did power rankings of the 25 man roster, and I don't know if you got a chance to see them because I released them while we were at the ballpark. You were checking out a different part of the park, and I was getting a little work done before we had our rendezvous in dugout box 3, which is not nearly as nefarious as it sounds. So I'm going to start from the bottom, working my way up, and I just kind of want to hear if there's anywhere you may differ. Lance Lynn is number 25. I said C. Mo, comma, low. So C. Logan Morrison. Velocity good, location a work in progress. So, I mean, he hit 95 in his last start, but obviously was not very good. But my contention at this point is that spring training matters for these guys, and they're still going through, you know, a bit of a spring training transition for him and Morrison, who's number 24. Not quite time to worry yet, I said, for Morrison. But those two guys, I think you pretty much have to put on the bottom two rungs because of not only how bad they've been, but how much they've played. You know, there's a lot of negative effect for guys who play every day and play that badly.
Yeah, no qualms there. And I think that if you look at the offseason, the things that they did and the things we were so excited about with the Twins, you look at him now, and you said, well, why are they 10-16? I think you can point to the fact that their two big offseason acquisitions thus far have been arguably the two least valuable players on the 25-man roster.
So,
and it's not a coincidence that they signed late either.
Right.
I don't think.
Alex Cobb, tough start. Greg Holland, tough start. I mean, there's some common threads here that you don't have to squint too hard to figure out. I got Phil Hughes at number 23. In the bullpen to work out kinks, watch his velo. If he picks up velocity in the bullpen, I have faith he could be useful. But I don't know what I would say I am. I'm not optimistic just because I know how much he's gone through. It's not the Glenn Perkins situation necessarily, but I know that he's been through a lot of crap with his right, whether you call it his right side, right arm, right shoulder. And you just want the best for the guy, but is it likely he's going to get back to who he was before? I just don't feel like there's a lot of likelihood, even out of the bullpen.
I think the hope for me for Phil Hughes at this point is that his velocity can tick up in shorter outings out of the pen,
yep.
And he can become a bit of a mid-inning bullpen weapon type. Now, I think that's probably the best-case scenario for Phil Hughes at this point. Yeah. I wouldn't run him back out into the starting rotation.
What you hope Tyler Duffy could be?
Yeah, exactly. What you hope you could have got out of Tyler Duffy. That's kind of what you're hoping you can get out of Phil Hughes at this point. But I wouldn't run him back in the rotation.
No, no, and I don't think there's going to be anything like that happening with not only Trevor May and Irvin Santana, but Michael Pineda in the house at Target Field the last couple days, or actually, well, yesterday. And Paul Molitor said today there's a chance he'll contribute by the end of the year, too. So it's going to be a numbers game in a good way. Jason Castro at number 22, really slow start with the bat. Defense has been whatever. And then number 21, Fernando Rodney. And I had some fun with this. So I said 10 words or less for my explanation. So I said, Fernando Rodney is Valley Fair's newest attraction, still has velocity, need more changeup.
Yeah, I mean, he has a good changeup, too, and he went through this last year where he didn't really throw his changeup for the first month of the season with Arizona and struggled. And I think if he can get the feel for that back, it's what makes him a dangerous pitcher because the changeup is good, looks the same as the fastball. And as we saw today in person, he still got some gas left. He hit 96 on the gun today, I think 95, 96. So I think he's going to be all right. I think he'll get things straightened out. But it is always interesting when Rodney comes into the ballgame.
By the way, I noted today, so Romero throwing gas. Hildenberger comes in with Funk from the right. Duke, Funk from the left. Reed steps it up a notch, and then Rodney brings the gas back. I don't know if that was intentional, but that's actually kind of a funky, like, peaks and valleys way to attack a team in a single game.
It's interesting, right? It kind of makes things a bit difficult on hitters, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You have a kid who's throwing gas with a nasty slider, and then you get the sidewinder from the right side, the crafty lefty out of the pen, and then you can heat it back up. It's interesting what that might do to hitters and their perceptions.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask around if there's some method to that madness. 20th, Taylor Rogers. I just said usage patterns make analysis difficult. Needs to retire left-handed hitters consistently. I mean, if he doesn't get lefties out, he's not a useful pitcher. That's not me being a jerk. It's just
That's just true.
Gregorio Petit at 19. I said minor league lifer, grinder, good clubhouse guy. Pretty quickly, you're finding where the base level is here. Because 18 is Fernando Romero. Most exciting debut since Barrios/Liriano, and then just the single word command ? So basically, that's ground zero. Anybody beneath the guy who was making his big league debut today when I posted this, he hadn't thrown a pitch yet in the big leagues. That kind of tells you where you sit as far as plus minus. And I put Petit underneath Romero just because I'm not giving Petit too much credit for one big league game prior to today with the Twins. So from there, I mean, I'm sure you have no gripes with Romero at 18 before he threw a big league pitch, do you?
No, no qualms at all. I mean, the bottom six guys there have been really rough, so I think that's, with the exception of Petit, obviously. The bottom five have been pretty rough, and Petit, obviously, one game you can't really judge, so I think that's a good spot to place Romero.
17th, Matt McGill. I said, good soldier to this point. Watch the velo. Fangraphs has him 94.4, which is about two ticks up from his last time in the big leagues, which is actually not that recent. But I think we saw a 96 with the cut, which I was telling you about today at the game. It's interesting. I mean, as much as I was like Nick Young ? Meme when they called him up, you know what? These guys know more about arm talent than I could ever dream to know, and there's a reason why certain guys just resurface. You know, Charlie Morton starts throwing 98 for the Astros. Granted, there's some questions about spin rate and what substances they're using. But I tell you what,
subtweet Trevor Bauer,
subtweet Eno Saris, subtweet Lance McCullers, you name it. But McGill, I think, is interesting. I don't know that he's going to be a stud. He's a great dude. I talked to him a couple times already, and I like him a lot. But I tell you, I think he's going to be interesting. And at 17, I don't think I've really had a misstep here. His first two appearances have been fine, if not particularly special.
Yeah, I had the similar reaction to you when he was called up. Because I just went, Matt McGill, wasn't he, you know, a minor league free agent? Isn't he more of just a AAA depth guy? Why are we're really just, I mean, it felt like Nick Tepish. It felt like Drew Rosinski. It felt like, you know, one of those. But the profile
that's friend of the program, Drew Rusinski, you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Friend of the program, Drew Rusinski. Yeah. No disrespect to Drew.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, forget Drew Rusinski. Adam Wilk. It felt like Adam Wilk and Nick Pappas. It just felt like one of those things, or guy, triple A depth piece.
the pitching version of Gregorio Petit.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
Yeah.
The pitching version of Gregorio Petit. But the profile is interesting. He's looked good thus far in his two appearances. But the profile is interesting, as you mentioned, 96 with the cut. Velo's ticked up a little bit.
He can work shorter bursts if Phil Hughes is a long guy. So the shorter bursts are when he starts throwing 95, 96, whatever.
Right.
I joked with him. I said, did you have any idea your Velo was going to go here? And he's like, well, not really. But I said, yeah, that's like the old adage with money. How much do you need? More. Because he's like, I'd like to see it two more ticks. I'm like, yeah, who wouldn't like to hit 98? I mean, like Fernando Romero did. But he's a really good guy. Let's move on here. 16, I have A-Ray Adrianza at shortstop. Stretched as a starter, elite defensive shortstop, best used late. I think it's pretty clear his limitations offensively this year compared to last. But you don't want him out there for 100 games a year unless it's 60 of them where he comes in the eighth inning when you're making some maneuvering in the infield.
Yeah, no, the only redeeming quality for Ari Adrianza really is his ability to pick it at short. I've always really liked him over there defensively at short, but the bat is just so limited.
Yep.
You really can't live with starting him, five games a week.
Yeah. 15th, I have Ryan Lemaire, outfield. I just said versatile, elite facial hair game. Although he shaved the beard, and I asked him about that. It's only fair that the guy who wears 24 after Trevor Plouffe is super handsome as well. Like, yes. I have no problem with my identity here to tell you that I think he's super handsome. But great in the clubhouse. I think 24 has to be a handsome man's number from now on. And so I say his elite facial hair game, elite stubble game. He's a good-looking dude. I got no problem saying that. And, he helps him out in center field in the eighth and ninth innings of a lot of games.
I will say that the only other guy to previously wear 24 in a brief stint was Jaime Garcia in his one start with the Twins. Also elite facial hair with Jaime Garcia. Yeah. A very well-trimmed, well-kept beard. So there's something about that number. Right?
Twins didn't see him against the Blue Jays either, which I don't know what he's up to this year. I haven't looked. But 14th, I have Robbie Grossman. I said best eye on the team, comma, non-Mauer division, and then defense with a question mark, which... yeah, I think that's pretty much the Robbie Grossman experience. Any gripes with 14, 15, 16 of Grossman, Lemaire, and Adrianza?
I would have put about five more question marks after defense with Robbie Grossman.
Yeah, it's
but no gripes on the ranking.
Friend told me that Grant Spears told me that Robbie is number two on the team in sprint speed behind Byron Buxton.
This is shocking to me.
I am shocked.
I did not know this.
So we're top 13. We're starting to get into guys who are making more positive contributions. I got Trevor Hildenberger at 13th, moving in the right direction and funky. Nothing real earth-shattering there, but the two-inning appearance here earlier in the Blue Jays series was the most encouraging, which he actually corroborated when I asked him about that today. Anything about him that you've seen that you've really been impressed by, or are you just feeling like maybe he's not back to where he was before, but he can at least throw innings and get the bridge to Addison Reed and those guys being fairly stable?
So he's not all the way back to what he was. But he's starting to look like the Hildenberger of last year, the guy who was utterly dominant that could be relied on
it didn't
to basically
take,
get any out.
I'm glad it didn't take going back to the minors because I didn't want to see that happen.
Right, I agree. He struggled in the spring, and then early on in the season, couldn't throw a strike, it felt like, to save his life. Wasn't locating very well. Everything was up. But in his last couple outings, he really seems to be back to the pitcher of old, keeping hitters off balance, keeping the ball down, and getting a ton of ground balls.
Yeah, absolutely. I have Zach Duke, 12th. I said improving, will throw big innings this year, not a loogie. For people new to the program, new to the verbiage, Lugia's lefty one-out guy, which is a lefty specialist, a la, well, Taylor Rogers, Buddy Beauchere's, but maybe not used like that.
Ryan O'Rourke.
Ryan O'Rourke is a good one. O'Rourke's my man. I mean, he's my dude, and I hope he does good things with the Orioles, but I think he's still on the shelf right now with the Tommy John. But, yeah, exactly the way that those guys are best used. That is not Zach Duke. I think Zach Duke is like a video game pitcher who has like 10 different arm slots, angles, and stuff. And it just messes with you as a hitter. He'll quick pitch you. He'll throw a slider 3-0. I mean, he's just crazy. He's literally like a wily old, you know, like a wily old vet on the mound, and he'll mess with you. And I love it.
It's basically Craig Breslow 2.0, or what they thought they were going to get out of Craig Breslow, or maybe hoped that they would get out of Craig Breslow. Moves the ball over the place. Lot of really slow stuff. Like you mentioned, different arm slots. It's super tough to run against, as we posited today that he would be. So
yeah, when I called Kendry Morales an 8 runner on the scale of 20 to 80.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's about right. He's an 8 runner, yeah.
But I'm
excited about Zach Duke. I do like Zach Duke. I think he's going to pitch well for the Twins this year. I think he's going to pitch good innings. And his start isn't necessarily indicative of who he is.
A little bit of Matt Belisle in him. Belisle was DFA'd by the Indians today. Any thoughts on potential reunion there?
No, man. We talked about this on our previous podcast together in the offseason, and you were stumping pretty hard for Matt Belisle, pounding the table for Matt Belisle.
The numbers weren't pretty this year with Cleveland, but on a minor league deal, I'd be interested.
Well, sure. I mean, there's no harm in signing him back on a minor league deal.
But that's why he signed this offseason, so I can't imagine why there would be more demand now after he's pitched, I think it's like 9 uninspiring innings. So, maybe.
Yeah, no. I don't know that I see it, but just with the way the Twins have been cycling through pitchers, another arm to throw into the mix probably doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Jake Odorizzi, 11th. I said results okay, peripherals less so, progress coming. I mean, I think we all believe Jake Odorizzi is going to be all right. 3.94 ERA, I think his FIP is close to like 5. I think he's going to be fine. It's just, you know, he's not an ace. We know that. He's way more like a Scott Baker, which as a number 3 or 4 starter is dandy. But he's got more in the tank than he's showed so far. I think that's been the weirdest thing for me this year is what we've seen from these guys. You know, we're used to regressing their numbers or knowing that they're not going to walk 6 batters per 9 all season long. Like, I still don't really know what to actually expect from a lot of these guys because we've seen so little of them. You know, Lance Lynn, for instance, like, I know he's not going to have an 8 ERA all season long, but there's still this gnawing part of me where I'm like, okay, but if he had 3-point whatever ERAs in years past, he didn't start those years with 8 ERAs, did he? And I haven't gone back to look.
Right.
But that's where it starts gnawing at me, like, well, what if he's a 4.5 guy? What if he's a 4.2 guy? Are they going to bring him back? Or what happens? So it's weird. It's just a weird year, and it's only a month in. I kind of like being kept on my toes, though, to be honest with you.
It's true. It's a weird year, but as you mentioned, we are only a month in. It's a long year, so there's a lot of time for this stuff to turn around. Although with Lynn, I am a bit concerned. It just seems the last couple starts, I'm like, well, there's no way his ERA can get any higher.
And then
it somehow spikes upward again. So it's been a concerning start for him. I think most concerning for me is he can't keep the ball in the ballpark, and he can't throw it over the plate. And when he does throw it over the plate, it seems to leave the ballpark. So it's been a little concerning for Lynn.
Yeah, for sure. So we're to the top 10. I got Mitch Garver at 10th. I said, has proved he belongs now to sort out playing time. What do you think about that?
I don't know if I texted you this the other day. I think I meant to. I legitimately think Mitch Garver should be the everyday catcher.
Probably.
I think the bat's too good to keep out of the lineup.
Okay, but at $16 million still owed roughly to Jason Castro.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
You really can't do it, but...
I don't know.
And Castro's battle turned around. But I think defensively they're similar enough, and Garver's bat's better, where I would at least like to see him get more playing time or at least do some platoon action.
Yeah, for sure. I don't hate that idea at all. I have Eddie Rosario 9th. Game lacks polish, but few Twins more exciting. And we had that discussion at the game today, too. But, you know, Rosario is a very exciting player. He's not a very polished player. But there are few players, and I think, you know, Sano and Buxton, the two guys on the DL, obviously are the caveats to this. But as far as, like, peak excitement factor, Rosario is pretty high on that list for this roster.
Yeah, he can do something at any moment that'll take your breath away as a baseball fan.
Well, and sometimes it's good or bad, too. Let's
right, yeah, it's true.
That axe swings both ways.
It does. And there's not very many people like that on the Twins roster, at least in the lineup. I think on the mound there are now, but at least in the lineup, I don't think there's very many people like that, especially with Buxton and Sano out. So I agree with your assessment there.
Well, thank you. So yes. We are into the top 10. Let me pull my screen back up here. Number 8, Addison Reed. And I put, he wrote the book, How to Be Badass While Throwing 91. It's amazing to me how good he is with the velocity where it's at. But he's been tremendous, tremendous so far to start the season. And maybe that speaks more to the expectations we have with the relievers we've seen. But honestly, I think he'd be a fit in any bullpen.
Yeah, he would. He struggled a bit last night, but it's really cool, and it's a really good feeling as a fan to have a guy where you go, oh, we know we're going to throw Addison in the eighth, and he's going to come out clean.
Yeah.
Like we know he's going to hold the lead. He is an absolute weapon. He is an absolute badass. And the Twins got him on a pretty nice deal, so it's nice to have that guy in the bullpen.
Yeah, for sure. I have Ryan Pressly above him. I said he's also a badass Texan, fighting Addison Reed for the role of best Twins reliever. So at number 7, again, Ryan Pressly. Honestly, you know, I know that I think the ERA favors Pressly, but I think those guys jockey back and forth all year long for best Twins reliever.
Yeah, and if they keep jockeying back and forth, that's a good problem for the Twins to have, right? I mean,
right.
Pressly, we've always been a big fan, I think both of us have, of Ryan Pressly's stuff. It didn't work out last year. I know a lot of people just wanted him, and you touched on this, but a lot of people just wanted him DFA'd, even though they don't know what that means.
Right.
Although I don't know if he has options or not.
He's out of options as of this year.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, right. But he, his stuff is finally, his performance is finally kind of matching his stuff. He's throwing more strikes, trusting the breaking stuff a little more, I think, and so far it's been good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's just looking like he belongs, which can't argue with that. I got Brian Dozier at 6th, blazing hot to start, cooled of late, keep the faith. I know he's really struggled of late. I think he's 3 for his last 36 or something like that. But the fact that his numbers haven't completely tanked, you know, that he doesn't have the same slash line as a Logan Morrison or a Robbie Grossman or anything like that, tells you how good he was to start the year. And he's going to be fine. I mean, he roped a couple balls that I think Kevin Pillar took hits away on, and you definitely don't want to hit the ball to that guy very often. But I'm not worried about Dozier. He's in a walk year besides. So obviously there's never a question about his motivation. But for the knuckle draggers who would say he's got no reason to perform, that's as backwards as it gets. So I have no issues or no worry about Brian Dozier. But number 6 for him, any qualms there?
No, it makes sense. I think he started hot enough to where you could put him that high on the list. I did hit a couple balls hard today, and I think he's, you know, the last 3-4 years for Brian Dozier shows you that he's going to be fine. I mean, he is a very good second baseman. This is just a slump. He's going to be fine.
Yep, absolutely. And so from there, we get into the top, the top 5, right? Yeah.
Yeah, top five.
I keep leaving the screen. I got Kyle Gibson at number 5. I said progress, overall good, needs more length. So going deeper into games, of course. But other than that, I think Gibson has been certainly a positive to this point. And I think if at any point last year, even towards the end of the year, if you thought that Kyle Gibson would be a top 5 guy to on this team, you'd be stunned and probably wondering what the other side of the pendulum was, which... let's not go
That's
there.
Part of it. But yeah, this has probably, for me, been the most pleasant surprise so far this season, maybe most encouraging thing with this Twins team, is Kyle Gibson looks like a completely different pitcher. There's a ton of swing and miss for Kyle Gibson in his profile so far this year. He's getting a lot of swings and misses on both of his breaking balls, which is surprising. It's something that hasn't been the case in the past. And if it's sustainable in any way, he's a completely different pitcher, and he's a lot more interesting.
Yeah, let's see here. I got swinging strike rate up for him at Fangraphs. It was, let's go in order from 2013 till now. 8.2, 8.8, 9.8, 9.8, 10.0, 11.9. So a 2% jump from last year to this year, that is a big deal, a very big deal.
It is, and I don't know how sustainable it'll be, but I think it does speak. I think there's a chance it is. I am hopeful it is.
Well, it's not like a 15 or 16% where you're like, no, you can't keep that up. It's a number that is in the bars, so to speak. Like BABIP is 280 to 320. It's in those bars where you're like, yeah, it could be quite easily sustainable.
Right, and like I said, it's the slider and the curveball. He seems to be mixing in the off-speed well, and it seems to be fooling hitters. And a lot of that comes with establishing his fastball first. Not to sound too much like Burt Blylevin, but the more he establishes his fastball, the better his fastball location is and command is, the better his off-speed stuff's going to be. And so far, that's been the case. The only concerning thing for me with him, it's been a lot of pitches in his outings. Not like you mentioned in your one-sentence scouting report, not a lot of length there, so I'd like to see that get better.
So we got four left. I don't know if you know the answers to these, but any idea who number four is?
I'm trying to think. I'm stumped.
Trying to remember who is even left. Jose Barrios.
Barrios is three? Four. Okay, got it. Awesome.
Flagging of late, but great overall. I mean, the numbers look great. A couple of tough starts since Puerto Rico, but overall, the total body work has been wonderful.
Yeah, he's been great. Looks like a pitcher who's taking the next step forward. Last start was concerning, just really seemed to be off all game. I don't know if he was sick or what, but literally from the first pitch, he didn't seem to have it.
But
the way he started the year really looks like a young pitcher who's kind of making the leap to kind of use an NBA term, but kind of making the leap, that next step forward. And it's really exciting to see, and something I think the Twins need if they have playoff aspirations.
Yeah, I got Joe Mauer at third, by the way. Rihanna will re-release her song Work with the word walk for Joe. Obviously, as a joke, but really nice start to the year. He reached base twice today, and in my game story, I just copied a picture that said lather, rinse, repeat, because that's basically what Joe's done all season long is get on twice per game. All season long, almost a 500 on base for a large portion of the beginning of this season. He's just been great. I mean, I don't know what else to say. The power would be nice to see it tick up to where his slugging percentage was over his on base. But for now, I don't think you can't gripe too much about the start he's off to.
Well, if the on base is over the slugging because the on base is so high, which is part of the case here.
Yeah,
I think he still leads the AL in on base percentage. He's been absolutely fantastic. He's been a lot closer to the Joe Mauer of last year than the Joe Mauer of the prior three or so years, and it's really encouraging to see. It's really encouraging to have a guy at the top of your lineup who is going to get on base it's more than 40% of the time right now, but about 40% of the time, and he's been a really valuable player to the Twins club.
I got Eduardo Escobar second, El Caballo. I said, making Twins forget about Jorge Polanco. Sort of.
I love him.
I think he's great, but here's the thing. As much as he's been playing well and, you know, picking up the slack where they would have really liked to have Polanco, it really does make your bench shorter. And the bench is now short with Adrianza starting. I wonder if Eric Ibar's not wishing he was still with the Twins, to be honest with you.
I wonder if he got an indication that he really was in the cards or if they weren't real impressed with his performance in the spring.
Right, that's possible.
It was weird that he straight up opted out. Do you know where he ended up, by the way?
I don't think he ended up anywhere. That's the thing. I don't think so either. While you talk about him.
But Escobar has been fantastic, and he's also in a walk year, which is interesting. He's a free agent at the end of the year, but he's been pretty much indispensable to this Twins team so far. I don't know if he leads the AL in doubles. I think he's right up there. He's got 13 now.
He was tied with Pillar and Miguel Andujar, I think.
Right. Okay.
At 12, and then he hit the 13th today, and Pillar stopped hitting doubles for a day, so at least at the very least he's ahead of Pillar. But by the way, Ibar did not sign anywhere. Wikipedia at least says he's a free agent, and we trust Wikipedia around these parts. So, I wonder if maybe they said, look, we just don't want this guy. But
it doesn't look like there's been any interest in bringing him back, and they came with Gregorio Petit up to the majors. So,
well, and again, I mean, if he hasn't been playing, you'd have to send him out somewhere. So,
right.
I don't know, but.
Right. Quick sidebar, quick tangent or question on Escobar.
Uh-huh.
So he's a free agent at the end of the year. What would you pay him?
3 years is $15 million, maybe.
Oh, I think it's going to have to be more than that. He makes like $5.1 million right now.
Right, but I mean, there's the Eduardo Nunez factor too.
Yeah, it's true.
So
it is one of the things with the free agents, the big fish on the market this next year too. They're going to get a lot of the money. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Escobar. I would go as high as 318.
But I would let him test the market. And if somebody gives him starter money and a starting job, that's tough. You can't match that because you have so much talent in this organization, both up the middle and even in the corners with Sano, I think can handle third base for a while. But at some point, who knows, maybe Royce Lewis plays third base if they keep Polanco around or whatever. They have enough infield talent that they should not be bending over backwards to keep Eduardo Escobar. And he deserves to get fair money. I don't want to say he should take a lower deal to stay with the Twins, but if there's a number that works for both sides, it would be really, really great to see that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll be priced out of Escobar. They don't have a lot of commitments on the books, really, season and next season.
They got like $30 million in most of it to Phil Hughes.
Right. So after this year and next year, they don't really have much on the books, so they certainly can afford him. It just comes down to, like you said, starting money and a starting job. But it's just, from a fan perspective, he's just someone I hope is a Twin for a very, very long time.
Yep, as I tweeted to that effect earlier this week. He's a great guy in the clubhouse. So that leaves Max Kepler, or as Escobar knows him, Mr. Germany Keplert, at number one. I said breakout time. He's hitting lefties, star potential. I mean, as much as we probably wouldn't want him to be number one with everyone healthy, pretty easy choice for me. Escobar's been great, but I just think Kepler is, at his age and his career trajectory, this is a future star.
The breakout is real, man.
Yep.
The breakout is real. Max Kepler's here to stay. And this Max Kepler, I think, will only really get better. And I think it's a future all-star corner outfielder, man.
Sign him to an extension now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would sign any of these young guys to an extension right now if they'd be amenable to it. I just don't. Those things take time, and we'll see if it happens.
Yeah, like if you can float a 6-year, $50 million deal or something like that to Kepler, I'm spitballing here. I'm just saying.
That's like the Yelich-type deal.
Something
almost
like that, and he's very similar to Yelich as a player.
Yeah.
Ground ball profile that you'd like to see tick up a little bit. But he's basically what you like to dream on and what the Twins probably saw when he was a kid. I mean, the athleticism and all that. You know you can fix a guy's swing if he's an athlete. You know you can move him around in the outfield. He's played, like I said, B-plus center field. But if you've been getting A's all your life, you're not happy with a B-plus. You know, if you've been getting
C's. Can we talk about the picture that I DM'd you today?
It got taken
down. Max Kepler.
It got taken down.
What?
I wonder if it was not legit. Tell the listeners what you're listening about. I was going back on my timeline because I retweeted it, and it said this tweet has been deleted or it was unavailable. And I was like, okay. Because when you sent me that, I was like, what?
Yep, they took it down.
Yep, so tell me what.
Weird.
Tell everybody what you're talking about, though, because you know what? You and I know what you're talking about, the listeners have no idea.
Yeah, that's true. MLB Pipeline, which is basically the prospect Twitter feed for MLB.com, tweeted out a picture of what they claimed was Max Kepler as an 18-year-old catcher in Germany tagging out Ronald Acuña Sr., who was 32 at the time, obviously the father of now Braves uber prospect and budding superstar Ronald Acuña Jr. But just crazy. I was like, well, 18 years old, Max Kepler is a catcher. And I just kind of blindly retweeted and I just kind of shrugged and I thought, okay.
Wait a second, though. Max Kepler at 18 in Germany?
That's, well, I don't, would it have been in the Instruct League? I don't know if it was in, I guess it wasn't in Germany.
But then why were they playing Ronald Acuna Sr.? Because he signed with the Twins at 16, right? So, I mean,
yeah, he would have been over here, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, why would he, so that's what's confusing to me. I'm not questioning it. All I'm saying, though,
is. They did take it down, too. They gave you ammo to question.
Right, so if Kepler's catching at 18, which I don't know about that.
There's I don't think he was. I think we would have probably known that.
Not only that, but is Kepler a right-handed thrower? I don't even know. That's the other thing to think about.
No, Max is left-handed.
So there's no way he was catching. That was a right-handed thrower.
Isn't he?
I'm looking now because yeah, he throws lefty. That's not Max Kepler. There's no way. Because there's a right-handed
thrower.
So that
wasn't even right.
It couldn't be because when Max Kepler was 18, it would have been 2011. Are you telling me 7 years ago, Ronald Acuna Sr. was only 32? That means he'd be 39
Possible.
Now. And so he could have had a kid as a teenager.
Ronald Acuna Jr. is only 20 years old. He's young. That's possible.
Okay, so Ronald Acuna Sr. was in the Mets system, apparently. He's 38. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
He played in the Venezuelan leagues until 2010, it says. Boy, his kid's a lot more talented than he was. Oof. Look up these numbers when you're done, man. I tell you what. It's like the...
Was it rough?
like a 694 OPS in the minors. 688 across all levels, including foreign ball. Highest number I see is a 743, and that's in Kingsport as a 20-year-old in the Appalachian League. 38 games. No,
well, his kid is phenomenal.
Yeah, his kid was in the big leagues by the time his dad was in rookie ball. That tells you something. Well, anyway, Max Kepler first. He's not a catcher in any way, shape, or form. If people have gripes, they can at me, Brandon_Warren. They can at Midwest Swing Pod. They can at @2__Canes with a Z. They should not at J.R. Fagan, who was on the first half of this show, The Athletic Chicago. Got to rep The Athletic, rep Chicago. Tremendous writer who will see the Twins this weekend. Hey, buddy, you got anything to add before we drop off the radar here for a few days?
No, excited for the Twin Series in Chicago. Really think they're going to turn things around. Maybe catcher Max Kepler will hit a couple dingers.
Yep, Mr. Catcher Kepler. So you've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Zone Coverage Podcast Network. Look for us and this show on like Wednesday nights into Thursday mornings and then on Sunday, Monday. I think that's going to be kind of the regular program we're going to go with. But, shoot us some questions if you have questions. Shoot us some suggestions if you want to hear some specific segments and that sort of thing. Otherwise, thanks for joining the ride, and we'll catch you again in a few days. Peace.